you are the only human to backflip on Mount Everest. That's true, right?
Yeah, at the top of Everest. Dude. We have to go now or we will die.
Wow.
But we have to at least give it a shot. When I was training for the Bear Crawl Marathon, it was 12 months of bear crawling every day.
How many times have you knocked a tube down?
The conversations I had in Antarctica at 12,000 feet with SEAL teams. Those were crazy. Some of these guys took down Osama bin Laden. Put your health at the absolute top priority in your life, no matter what.
Dude, first off, man, thanks for being here. You're a legend. You are the only human to backflip on Mount Everest. That's true, right?
Yeah, at the top of Everest.
Dude, walk me through that. Whose idea? How'd that go down? Tell me everything.
Yeah. I was out on Everest for 47 days trying to get to the top. And on the summit push, there's four camps on summit. So you have base camp, camp one, camp two, camp three, camp four, and then you have summit. From base camp to the summit, you can get it done in, you know, 2-3 days, right? If you're acclimated correctly.
Yeah.
And so on that summit push, after we've acclimated, after we've gone up and down multiple times, we're at camp three, and weather looks pretty good. And so we're like, let's go for the summit. And so from camp three, we go to camp four, and you don't sleep because the adrenaline's rushing. Like it is.
At all points in time?
I would say more from camp three to summit, just because in my mind, I'm like, I might be standing at the top of the world.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, don't sleep at camp four. And then from four to summit, it's a grind, man. You're high up. I mean, you're 25,000 to 29,000 feet. You're just climbing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that moment, I was freezing. My toes were cold. I was kind of down. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to summit. This is crazy. I've actually never said this before, but halfway through, we might be at 27,000 feet. With oxygen, the more you turn your oxygen up, the faster it
runs out.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you have to keep your oxygen low, normally at level one, and that will drop you about 1,500 feet from where you're currently at. So if you're at 27,000 feet, you put level one, you go to 25.5,
yeah.
Right? And so I put it to level four because I'm like trying to get some. And my Sherpa looks back at me, Jen, and he just sees me and I'm like, I'm too relaxed. And he's like, Dev, I'm going to give you 5 more minutes like this, like max. He's like, then I'm going to turn it back down. I'm like, okay. And so in that 5 minutes, I'm not kidding. I locked out my harness. I'm at 27,500 feet. I lock out. I'm exhausted. I haven't slept for 60 hours. I lock out and I literally just take a nap. 60 seconds. I went into deep sleep. I remember the dream I was having.
Oh, really?
Like 60 seconds. It was a crazy cat nap. And I remember just... And that was Jen turn. He's like, you can't sleep on the mountain. You can't sleep on Everest. We're about to go to the top of the world. Like, you can't be sleeping right now. Like, it's dangerous and it's negative 30, 40 degrees out, you know? And so we turned it back to level one. And I go, and I wake up and I'm like, all right, let's go, baby. And I had a crazy boost of energy. And so from that moment to the top, I'm like, oh my God, I'm about to stand top of the world. I'm so excited. Like, it's ripping. I'm trying to stay safe because, you know, you're going through crazy cliffs. You're walking over dead bodies. I mean, it is crazy. And then I get to the top and I'm like, whoa, whoa.
Holy.
I was mind blown.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing higher on the planet Earth than me right now. And I mean, I'm getting chills thinking about it. And I was just like, whoa. And I'm like, I'm never coming up here again, ever in my life. I will never stand right here again for the rest of my days on Earth.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a backflip.
That was the first thought. You're like, how can I make this special?
I was like, I'm going to do a backflip.
More special than the fact that this is the first
more
time.
Honestly, probably to tell my kid one day.
Yeah.
Like, Dad, what was it like? And I don't know. It was, tell him. And I did a backflip. Like, your dad did a backflip at the top. More for my kids more than anything. And then I remember I had Jen. I'm like, yo, record this right now.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't record it, you never did it.
Did it happen?
That's the 2025 slogan.
Yeah.
And so we did that. And yeah, I actually told the guy behind me, I'm like, yo, watch out what we're doing. You know, I might land right here. And I don't think he knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, what? This kid's going to backflip. Also, the crampons are heavy. The boots are heavy. Mm-hmm. The suit weighs about 3 pounds. The other gear you have on. So I might have.
And you're low on oxygen, all this stuff.
Yeah. I took the oxygen off for this. And so, yeah, that was the world's highest backflip.
World's highest backflip.
Yeah.
It's so epic. Now, was there a chance where you was it sketchy? Was there a chance of, I mean, you're not on the cliff where I was falling backwards and.
On the backflip, I clipped myself in. If I wasn't clipped in and I fell back, I'd be dead. Actually, in China, because Everest is split in half. Mm-hmm. Nepal owns half of it. China owns the other half. And so you can summit from either side. We summited from the Nepal side.
Okay.
We actually had permits to do the China side, but China wouldn't let us in until later in May, which wouldn't allow us to summit. Because there's only like one real summit window at the end of May every year. For some reason, the jet stream, you know, it's at about 30,000 feet. It's like a couple hundred miles per hour wind. It's where planes fly up. It calms down at the end of May and it goes to 5-10 miles an hour at the top of Everest. But Everest is so high that the jet stream literally pierces the mountain.
Man.
And you can see it. You can see the wind just ripping up there. But for some reason, once a year, if you're lucky, there's like 2, maybe 3 days that the jet stream calms down. And so anyways, yeah,
epic dude. So you kind of walked over this comment you made, no pun intended. You're walking over dead bodies.
Yeah.
Like there's people who tried and failed and are dead and they multiple. Leave the bodies to decompose because it's just not.
Oh, no. It's a free, I mean, it's, you can't save them. It's no, there's no helicopters that can go that high. There's no, it's too high.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's impossible right now, at least with the technology we have to go and just save the
crazy.
Also, a human is just trying to survive up there by himself or herself,
right.
Let alone carrying a 200-pound, you know, dead weight down.
Right.
You know, you're also on cliffs. Sometimes you're only walking on, you know, 3-4 inches and your feet are back to back and there's a 1,000-foot drop. Mm. So how are you going to carry a 200-pound body that way when you're barely getting over?
Yeah.
There's no regulation up there. After camp, really camp two, there's a little bit, but not even. I mean, base camp there is, but really after base camp, it's a free for all. I mean, I know stories, people, you know, cutting lines and just throwing people in,
bro,
you know,
crazy.
And like, you would think, oh, someone just fell, you know, or someone just fell.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, there's no regulation after camp four, especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a total free for all.
They tell you like this could be a suicide mission. Like you're
full suicide.
And mission. And the odds are what you'd say, like,
I don't
on
know.
Average.
Yeah. I don't know the exact odds.
Yeah. Did you ever think about that? Like, would you be a statistic? Like, did you ever think of that?
Yeah. I think I thought about that when I was descending down. When I was coming down after I summited, I was going over the Hillary Step, which is this famous like cliff on Everest. Sir Edmund Hillary summited Everest for the first time in 1953 with Tenzing Norway, which was a Nepalese guy. And so they are the first recorded people to summit. There's a couple other people that
legend has it,
but they don't have proof.
Sure.
And so anyways, there's the Hillary Step after Sir Edmund Hillary. So we're going over the Hillary Step. And Jen and I look at each other and there's like 100 people from us to another cliff. And there's like 3 inches to step on. And the people are back to back to back to back because they're all trying to come up because there's only a couple summit windows in a year. So they're all trying to summit.
Wow.
So we already summited at 5:30-ish a.m. We're coming back down. There's, you know, that whole debacle kind of happening. And I'm like, shit, like, there's no way that we're getting from here to there because there's nowhere to step. There's physically nowhere that I'm going to put my feet or
his
feet.
So you're gridlocked. And you're thinking, how much time can I actually sustain this?
With what oxygen we have, with the resources we have, with the energy we have, with like just everything. Like, how are we going to get from A to B?
Hmm.
And I remember thinking in depth. I was getting very emotional. And then I snapped out of it, but I got very emotional. And I was like, man, you know, what's my mom going to say? What's my best friend going to say? What's my girlfriend going to say? What's, you know, what's future me going to think?
Yeah. Or
like, wow, I died on Everest. Like that was it. And then Jen and I had a very serious conversation with each other and along the lines of, we have to go now or we will die.
Wow.
But we have to at least give it a shot. And coming from Jen, who summited four times prior, he was scared. Like I looked at him and he's like, I don't know, Devin. he's questioning it. So that just made me question everything. But yeah, that was pretty sketchy. We ended up getting over, we might have walked 30 yards, but it took us 45 minutes to an hour. Just because you're going around each person, clipping in one side, clipping in the other, going around, clipping in one side, clipping the other, trying to find, you know, footing.
Yeah.
And we went over, and then 30 minutes later, that ledge collapsed and a bunch of people fell in.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Yeah. And they lost. They lost their lives.
Oh my.
One of the guys, I don't know him, but he was a CrossFit coach in the UK. I guess a couple other Nepalese people, and yeah, it was pretty crazy.
That's so real, my God.
Super real.
You said it took you 30 yards. You said it took you that long.
That's wild. Maybe 45 minutes.
Okay, so what did you learn about yourself in that process? Like, did you learn anything about who you are as a person, as a human, when you think back to that?
Yeah, I think I learned that. You got to really enjoy, you know, what you're doing day to day and like the time it's taking and not so focused on the outcome always, but rather focused on just being grateful for the now and being present. Because whether I summited or not, it was still a beautiful mountain to climb. I still had amazing conversations. Yeah. It still tested my limits. I still got so much out of it.
Sure.
And I think if I was so over obsessed with getting to the top, which I wasn't, like I went to the Hoffman Institute prior, which is a great 7-day reset. And it helped me kind of just reset my brain and really separate intentions versus expectations.
Interesting. Tell me more.
My expectation of the mountain before, you know, since I was a kid was I have to get to the top of Everest. I want to stand at the top of the world. But what happens if that expectation never happens? Depression, anxiety, stress, I'm not good enough, you know, versus going in with an intention of, I want to calm my mind. I want to enjoy the now. I want to test my body. You know, I want to meet new people. All those four things happened. You know, I met amazing people. I tested my body. I helped calm my mind. Those are the intention versus the expectation of getting to the top. And so when you switch your mindset up with life, with business, with whatever, you know, for example, you want to get married, or do you want to have a good relationship, right? If you're so focused on getting married, then your intention of having a good relationship and calming and loving and whatever, that kind of just goes out the window because you're so focused on getting married, you know?
Which sometimes that very thing, not to cut you off, but like sometimes being so hyper-focused on the outcome prevents the actual requirement or prerequisite or foundation to actually get the desired outcome.
Right.
So like you're kind of, I know from my experience, like I've so hyper-focused and I'm hurting myself in that sense.
You're hurting because you're so focused on the future versus the now. And then time just feels like it's getting out of control. And so taking every situation in life, whether it's business and, you know, I want to get X amount a month. Mm-hmm. Well, why? What's the intention there? Well, because I want to own my time. I want to, you know, I just want to be able to do what I want when I want. I want to be able to, you know, lead people.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? If your intentions are to lead people and to do what you want when you want, you could do that before this company scales.
Facts.
You can do that now. And so focus on the intention versus the biz you know, and like that big goal that you might have, the intentions, most intentions can happen now. Mm. A lot of these expectations are a future la la land thought. And not that you're not going to get to it, but I think the expectation is what adds stress, anxiety, I know, to my life at least. Yeah. So I try to take out expectations, and it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if I come on this podcast and I'm like, we have to have a perfect podcast. You know, we have to tell the audience exactly what they want to hear. It has to be perfect. We can't mess up. Versus my intention is just to have a good conversation with Brian. You know what I mean? And so going in with the intention versus the expectation, I think is the biggest thing I learned on Everest.
So good, man.
Yeah.
And that's what's so impressive about you, because for me, you have so many sticks in the fire. I mean, right? Like so many things you got going on. You're incredibly skilled. You have incredible strength, superpowers, and your hands almost in everything. So it's like, my question is how? Like basically, like what? How are you able to have so many different things happening in your life and still say the main goal for you is to be present? Like that's impressive to hear from you. It's easy if you're just a monk in a monastery, which God bless him. I wish I was living that life sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be in the present, to be so now focused, is so impressive for someone like you. So how do you stay there?
It's a work in progress, man. Yeah. It's not easy. And I think in my 20s, I was more expectation driven and goal driven, and I have to have a title and I have to be, you know, be somebody
important.
Yeah. I have to be someone important, and like, you know, you're hustling and you're, you know, you're trying to, you know, do what's right and just grind, grind, grind. Mm-hmm. I think as I've just evolved my life, my career, my relationships, just everything, I don't know. When I find myself focusing on today versus yesterday or the future, then time just slows down.
Yeah.
And I think I was saying this yesterday to someone that I think about death a lot. And when I think about death, I don't want to die, you know, and I never know when that's going to happen. But I know when I think of the future, it speeds time up and it feels like I'm getting closer to death. Mm. And when I think of the past, I feel like it's a waste of brain space, you know? And so now thinking of the now and trying to be present makes the most sense to me right now in my life and like just in general, right? Like, I don't want to get close to death, so I'm not going to think about the future. Mm. You know, people ask me, oh, what's your 5-year plan? I don't know. I don't even know if I'm going to be alive in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. And so I think the now is the most important. I notice entrepreneurs and founders too, they work so hard for 10, 20 years and they get to their expectation or their goal. And I've chatted with many and they're like, I kind of forget what happened. It was stressful.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to live. Now I get to focus on my health. Now I get to go do adventures. Now I get to do X, Y, Z. And in my mind, I'm like, you're out of your mind if you think I'm wasting 10, 20 years of my life and I'm not going to live during that time and I'm only going to focus on one thing. It's just not, it's just, there's no way it's ever happening.
Yep.
You know? And so in my mind, you got to enjoy the now and you got to add the things to your calendar that you really want to do, right? Whether it's adventures, whether it's meeting with people, whether it's visiting places, you know, it's not hard to go run or bike across America. You get a bike and you just start pedaling, you know?
It's not hard, guys.
Yeah, you get some shoes, you start walking, running, right? Yeah. If Forrest Gump can do it, everyone can do it.
Immediately can do it.
But a lot of these things, it's just getting over this, the confidence hiccup that a lot of people run into, like, well, what if I fail? What if I can't do it? What if I, you know, it doesn't, you know, happen how I want.
Exactly how it should.
It doesn't fucking matter. Yeah. Get that out of your head.
Yeah.
Just start it and see where it goes. You know, and I think that's my mindset with really actually everything.
Yeah.
Just start it. Just see where it goes. You're gonna, no matter what, you're gonna have to pivot eventually, whether you start running across America and, you know, you twist your ankle. Okay, guess what? You have 5 days, you're going to get a little bit healthier, you get better, and you keep going. That's part of the story. That's part of the journey. That's part of, you know, what's supposed to happen. I love watching The Chinese Farmer. And I don't know if you've seen it, but you should link it on here on this podcast. Mm-hmm. It takes 3 minutes, and I would recommend anyone listening to this, they pause and go watch The Chinese Farmer.
Okay.
But nothing's as good as it is supposed to be or seems, and nothing's as bad as it's supposed to seem. Everything is just what it is.
Interesting.
And so even when you get to that goal, that doesn't mean that's the best. And that's where you should feel ecstatic. And just because something is falling apart doesn't mean that's the end of the world. Just accept it for what it is. And I think that's the ultimate strength a human can have, is when they can just be like, okay. Like, I respect the shit out of athletes when they just won a Super Bowl, they scored the game-winning touchdown, and they're like, okay. They're not going nuts. They're just like, okay, I did it, you know? And when something is going so bad in that Super Bowl and they fumble and they lose the game and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, those are the most respectable people on planet Earth. I envy them. I think that is the ultimate strength a person can have, is when you can calm both those situations and just say, I accept it. Okay. Mm. You know? I don't know.
That's fire. And I got to imagine, when people are in that and when I'm in that, that sense of peace, I believe, comes from a place of, I've done the work. I've given my best to the now.
Right.
I did everything I could. And right. in the best way I knew to do it.
Yeah.
And being at peace with that, letting go of the outcome, that's a very powerful position. Yeah. I agree.
And dude, you're so right in the giving it everything you have.
Yeah.
I think that's the other part.
Because if you don't, I feel like that haunts you. Haunted me in my life with baseball.
Oh, yeah. I give everything 1,000%.
Yes.
No matter what it is, whether it's us going on this podcast and preparing, and then, you know, having a great 3 hours, we're going to have sauna, we're going to work out after this, like, really giving it my all right here and not letting my brain scatter around, like, now, here. Mm. Or if it's in a relationship, or if it's in my business, like, giving it my all 100%. Because if you don't, I lose sleep over that. That's the ultimate regret, you know? That's something that would haunt me when I'm 70, 80, 90, you know?
So how do you know what to put your attention to? Because if your attention is so powerful, and I believe that as humans, we have a gift of being creative power. We can create.
I'll tell you, yeah.
And so how do you know what to put your attention to?
Yeah, so I have a very strict calendar and a calendar system that helps me. I only do max 15 minute calls, and it's from 10 to 3. In that time, I talk to 20, 30 people. And sometimes calls are quicker than that, you know, 5-10 minute call.
Sure.
And so when I'm on those calls, I'm not letting my brain scatter to another call or something else. I am fully there, right? And then I rest, and then I work out, I sauna, I, you know, maybe I have a couple other in-person meetings or whatever it is, but then I let my body rest and then I do it again the next day. If you don't have that rest period, then you can't show up 100% to the calls the next day,
yes.
The 5, the 10, the 15 minute calls or the meetings. Like, so that rest period and that reset and that, okay, my body's healthy, I'm healthy, my family's good, cool. Is the most important. If you don't have that, then I can't show up 1,000%.
Yeah.
If that in between is off, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
You know, everything else starts to feel off. Then my brain is scattered. Then I do miss a step in a business. Then I make an error.
Yeah.
And you can't make errors.
Yeah.
You know. And so I think that rest period, you gotta rest the brain, whether that's good sleep, whether that's good nutrition, whether that's, you know, meditation, sauna, cold plunging, running, whatever it is, whatever helps you reset, and then go in 100% the next day. You can't, if you're 80% recovery, 70% recovery, 60%, back to back to back to back, that compounding, then you're just giving everyone else 50%, 60%. You know, my recovery is like, 100% every single night. I missed up sometimes, yeah. But for the
can
most
we, can
part,
check, can we check that whoop? Can we check
yeah,
that?
Yeah, for the aura.
there you go.
That's really important to me,
yeah.
And then I can show up because. And by the way, that works for me. You know, like some people need an hour call, and some people need a call to have a call to have a call.
Sure.
I get on calls, and I think a superpower of mine is problem solving, and so I can get on. And I'm like, okay, boom, this is how we're gonna handle it. Mm-hmm. Next, you know, boom, this is how we're gonna handle it, and I just go back to back. Yeah, but if I don't rest, I'm screwed.
Yeah,
you know, if I don't rest that.
So the thing, the crazy part is you're telling me this and you're sharing this, which is so on point, and I know it to be kind of how I see life and how I see my highest performing type of day. But I think so many entrepreneurs fall victim to the more is always better.
No.
More longer calls, more stuff, more, and then I'll kind of like take care of myself with the crumbs of my day, essentially. Hey, real quick, I wanted to share with you the first official sponsor for the Live Elevated podcast is no other than Built Basics. What I'm rocking with my shirt and my hat, Built has been a staple of mine to and from the gym, whether it's a tank top or a shirt or shorts or a hat or even their jackets. And right now for this podcast, you can use code ELEVATED at checkout for 20% off. It helps me and supports the podcast so we can grow this thing. So don't hesitate. If you're looking to elevate your wardrobe, get some new gym gear, or have a really great selection of basic clothes for date nights and whatnot, use code ELEVATED at checkout. You'll get 20% off. All right. With that said, thanks for watching. Let's get back to the video.
Ever since I was a kid, I've been very stubborn with my time and who was telling me what to do at what point in my day.
You didn't like being told what to do?
Hated it, especially if it wasn't something I wanted to do. I loved my history teacher, and I loved, you know, him telling me what I need to do, where I need to sit in class, yeah. What I need to study, because I enjoyed it. I liked it. I liked history. I thought it was fun. But don't put me in, you know, freaking what class I hate, you know, English class,
or,
English or yeah. Computer class. And like, tell them, like, I hated it. I hated being told what to do on things I didn't want to do. And I think that has definitely carried my whole life. And, it used to look like a negative in my life. And now it's became an absolute superpower because it allows me to own my time and do what I want when I want to do it. With the best advisors around, with the best team around.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to own my time, you know?
So I love that. And when it comes to business, I've felt this for a long time. I used to work for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, you know, 4 years. I love certain aspects. Didn't like other aspects, if I'm honest. But I started thinking, you know, this whole idea of life by default or life by design. And I wanted to chase, like, hey, what's the life that I want to live? And I want to pursue that. And there's so many things that come to mind, like wisdom truths that, you know, decide on what kind of life you want and just say no to anything that's not it.
Have to.
You're someone who, I think it's even in your Instagram bio, like, live life for a living.
Yeah.
I'm living life for a living.
Yeah.
That's peak human experience. So I see you. I'm like, yeah, you're the embodiment of that. You're doing what you want when you want to do it. You're serving a greater purpose, which I love because you could be selfish, but you're not. So how did you get there? Like, how did you get to, I'm living life for a living?
Yeah. I think it started with who I was as a person, what values I wanted to live by. And so figuring out who I am, family, health, community, freedom of time, and giving back was a big one for me. And then it's saying no to the rest. And so I say no to a lot. It might look like I'm busy, but I would say I'm more productive than busy. There's not just like things added just to add them.
Yeah.
It's like very, very precise and productive of who I talk to every day and where I go and what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I started doing what I was really passionate about, which was training people 8 years ago. I loved helping people get healthier and happier. It gave me bigger purpose.
Yeah, kind of woke you up to more energy, purpose.
Whoa, and that fueled the energy into waking up more confident and happy every day. And then if I'm confident and happy every day, I can help other people, you know, do whatever hustle I'm doing, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's the training or starting ProMix, yeah. you know, with Albert, or, you know, investing in brands I love or whatever it is, right? And so how did it start? How did, like, what, where was that mindset switch, I guess you're asking? I don't know, man. I think it just, it's evolving over time. Like, it, I don't think it was just like one day it happened. It's, I don't know. I'm figuring it out like everyone else, but I know exactly what I don't want to do.
Yeah.
And so I just don't fucking do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's very simple.
Yeah.
And every day I get a choice. Okay. I have all this stuff on my calendar. Do I want to do that or do I not? Do I genuinely, does it align with my values? Does it not? Do I want to talk to these people? Do I not? Yes, no, yes, no. There are people I cancel because I just simply don't want to talk to them or simply don't want to do that. And it's out of respect for both of us.
Mm.
If you and I jump on a call and I don't want to be on the call with you, that is disrespectful.
That's why you didn't answer my call the other day?
To win. That's why now. It's people do. Imagine people jumping on a call. Two people jump on a call. And both in the back of their minds, I don't really want to get on this call.
Yeah.
I don't want to get on this call. Yeah. What kind of energy do you think that's creating?
100%. Obligation.
It makes no sense to
me. Yeah, yeah.
Don't get on the call. Switch it up. Switch your career. Switch who you're working with. Switch whatever it is,
yeah.
right? And everyone has that option. If you don't own your time, someone else will control your time. And so I really believe in, look at your calendar. And if you genuinely, if you're at a job or if you're owning a business or you're just getting out of college and you're looking at your calendar and there's things you just don't want to fucking do, then don't do it. It's not that complicated. Saying no to it is probably going to open up 20 other doors and it's going to make your brain say, okay, I just said no to this and this was my full income, or this was, you know, helping, you know, this part of my life, but I just said no to it because I really don't want to do it. What does your brain do?
Find solutions. Like,
what does your brain do for the last 150,000 years? It evolves.
Mm.
It creates solutions. That's what the human does. People are afraid to take that jump of just saying no to the things they don't want to do because they're like, well, it's comfortable right now. Growth and comfortability can't live in the same room. You can't grow and be comfortable, and you can't be comfortable but growing. It's impossible. And so saying no is actually it's an amazing little medicine that you can implement in your life, and it'll actually open your brain up into problem solving of what then needs to happen.
That's good.
You know what I mean?
100%. Now, and I love that. And I think as time goes on, you get in a position where you can do that and it becomes easier because you've ingrained this habit, you've ingrained this approach to life.
Well, so guess what? And then I start putting that out there.
Yeah.
Now that's what I'm attracting back.
Correct.
In.
Which
and
is.
So, and so now people know Devin's probably not going to say yes to this, or yo, I'm not even going to present this, or this doesn't align with his values. Mm. That's why in every podcast I say those five values. I want everyone to know if it does not hit on one of those fives, do not talk to me. Don't ask me questions. Yeah. Don't hit me up. Don't expect my time. Mm-hmm. And it's no disrespect. It's just like, I have a limited amount of time here on earth, like very limited, just like everyone else.
Yeah.
And like, I just don't want to waste my time.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't. I know what I'm doing. I know what I don't want to do. And like, that's what I'm sticking to.
Yeah.
And so those are the five, and that's just what it is.
I love it. Friendly devil's advocate. And we'll move on to another topic.
Yeah, go.
What do you say to someone who says, man, Dev, I hear you. But it's not that simple. It's not that easy. I feel trapped in this position, feel trapped with my circumstances. You know, you say to maybe say no to this and walk away from the job, but is that the right move? Like, tell me what I need to hear from that position.
For
it's
sure.
Not that simple.
You don't have to make a drastic decision in regards to stop immediately. If I'm saying say no to it, figure out how to say no slowly over the next 30 days. Put a time or a date on the map where you say, okay, I don't like doing this job. I don't like being in this relationship. I don't like going to this gym. I don't like doing XYZ. I know what I don't want to do. I'm going to put a 60-day timeline to this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give myself 60 days to try other things and to try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And after the 60 days, if what you did didn't work, okay, reset. I'm going to give myself another 30, 60 days.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be, well, I don't like my boss. I don't want to be here. See ya. That's not what I'm recommending.
Right.
I'm saying create a solution, but put a date first. Mm. And then your brain will start to figure out a solution. But you have to tell yourself internally, no, I'm going to say no to this in 30 days. I have 30 days to figure it out. And over the 30 days, go on walks, talk to people, find advisors, do your research, figure out solutions. That's where your brain expands.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you're, and that's the fun part. I'm going through a big transition right now and with Sweet Honey Farm and like, yo, it's not comfortable.
Yeah.
But it's really fun because I know I've, you know, I'm 33 years old. I know I'm going to get out of what we're dealing with right now. In the best way, it's a good, I see it as a really good problem to have. And over the next 30 days is where the company grows. It's where the business, it's where the people, it's where the community, it's where everything actually grows because I'm putting better systems or standards or, processes in place, but I would never be here if it was just comfortable because I would never push myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's uncomfortable. So that means I'm growing. I figure it out. And in 30 days, 60 days, I'm like, okay, this is the solution going forward.
Yeah. Before we tap into, because you posted something the other day, which I loved, and I want to hear more about why you answered it this way.
Yeah.
Because I love how your brain works. If you were to start all over again. So let's hold that real quick.
Yeah.
But you just talked a lot about this friction, this uncomfortableness, this discomfort, embracing that. Take me back to the bear crawl, because that's like something you're famous for. I mean, you're maybe not the only human who's done it now, because there's been people who saw you and freaking believed it's possible, got inspired by you.
Yeah.
Did that play a role in how you kind of embraced discomfort? I mean, why'd you do it?
Sure.
What'd you learn along the way?
Yeah, I noticed when I was training for the bear crawl marathon, it was 12 months of bear crawling every day. And at first, I think I get in this mindset where I know everything that I'm doing is temporary, including life.
Hmm.
It's all temporary. It's all going to be gone, or it's all going to pause and stop at some point in our life, whether it's bear crawling 5 or 10 miles a day, or you're on earth for 100 years.
Yeah, the good stuff and the bad stuff.
Yep, it's all temporary. And so in my mind, that's what I'm constantly thinking about with the bear crawl. What was the main question? Just like—
Yeah, same thing. What did you learn? If it was anything different than the Everest climb?
No, I think it's just temporary. I think it's the pain is temporary and life is temporary and all this bullshit that we go through is temporary. We're going to figure it out. That's the beauty of the human body, is it does figure it out. Yeah. Like you will, when you're at rock bottom, something happens. And I don't know, go listen to Huberman or Atiyah. Like they know the science behind it.
Yeah.
But your body, your brain comes together and it's like solutions.
Uh-huh.
And you start thinking through it. I think the gap is, people actually have the solution in their brain. They just don't act on it, you know? And everyone has a different solution of why they're unhappy or why they're going through ruts in their life or transitions. You have a solution. It's just about now acting on it. We're supposed to transition in life. We're supposed to evolve. We've been taught it since elementary school to middle school, to then high school,
right,
to then college, to then our internship, to then getting fired or getting a promotion, to then getting married. Like we're meant to transition in life. And so if you're not transitioning, then that's unhealthy, I believe. So embrace the transition and make sure that there's a good community around you and advisors and mentors that you can lean on, whether it's parents, whether it's external, whether it's people you're like, you know, I like the way that they're balancing their life, or I like how they're living, or I like how Brian balances, you know, prayer and health and, you know, entrepreneurship. Like, I like that. I'm going to look at Brian, right? Or I like how Jesse has 4 kids, you know, a great wife, but he still does these crazy adventures. Cool. Maybe you're like, yo, I love this guy or girl. Find someone that you can kind of look to. And when you're in those transitions, try to get on the phone with them or get in some type of group with them to where you get that energy. And that's what's going to help fuel the transitions. Don't go through transitions solo. that's no bueno.
Isolation, man. That's one of the biggest enemies of our potential as humans. Yeah. So, you know, if we get isolated, we get discouraged, we can't have someone reach down and pick us back up. We don't feel the inspiration from someone who's doing it or someone who's been where we want to go.
Yeah.
And so I want to ask you about the people in your life,
because rooms
that you walk in, the energy you feel is contagious. Mm-hmm. You know, the people you surround yourself with, you know better than anyone is doing that on purpose, not just finding yourself with people out of convenience based on vicinity.
Yeah.
So how do you look at surrounding yourself with the right people? How do you approach that?
Less career driven and more just who they are as a person. I like quality humans that also own their time.
Mm.
One of my best friends, Chris Howell, he builds gyms, at home gyms. The dude hated Wall Street, quit, was like, I'm going to figure it out. And over the past 5 years has fully figured it out. Yeah. And I respect him for that.
Yeah.
You know, he has one son, another one on the way, great wife, owns his time. No social media following, like, different industries than I somewhat, you know. My buddy Smitty, one of my best friends as well. Three great kids, great wife. I've known him, we were roommates.
He keeps popping him out. I keep seeing him on Instagram. I'm like, God bless you, bro. The family keeps growing.
Yeah, he keeps fighting. Yeah. He has three sons now. No social media, totally different industry. He's a longshoreman.
Sure.
Surround myself with those two guys a lot, you know? Guys like you, people that I respect, that they own their time, they love their families, they're faithful, they're good humans. I can have raw conversations. They're not looking for anything from me. Mm. I think those are the type of guys I surround myself with.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely career. I mean, luckily Albert, my partner at Promix, you know, we're best friends. We chat all the time. We do dinners, you know, we do our thing.
Is he married?
He's married. Yeah. Jesse Itzler and I, you know, we have Running Man and All Day Running together. Luckily, you know, we do all these adventures. I think all my business partners are my friends, which is a blessing. That's not always the case for people, and that's okay. I think it's kind of whatever floats your boat. But for me, I love that some of my best friends are also my partners. But I also have best friends that have nothing to do. It doesn't really matter. It's all life at the end of the day. It's 24 hours. And so I don't know if I necessarily believe in this whole like balance or like work versus life,
mm-hmm.
because it's still 24 hours. And so mesh it together, however makes you happy and works for your schedule and your life and your just overall happiness. I think that's all that matters. And for me, like I said, 10 a.m., 3 p.m., I do calls. Mm-hmm. After that, I'm, you know, doing kind of my thing to reset my body, everything.
It's healthy boundaries, it sounds like.
Boundaries.
Boundaries.
Yeah, boundaries. I like boundaries. Rhythm. Balance.
You live rhythmically, you know, you're in touch with recovery, with, you know, expression or performance or movement, but then you're in touch with like that stillness, that silence, that yin and yang, inhale, exhale.
Yep.
That's really
good. I like
good.
The rhythm or the boundaries.
Yeah, healthy boundaries.
I have very healthy boundaries.
Yeah, you inherently know what to say no to, almost like it's second nature.
Immediate.
You just know.
Yeah.
And I think that is a power, because in this day and age, there's so many things on everyone's plate. There's new things you could be doing. There's new opportunities, and you got to have a filter. You got to have this sense of knowing this might not be something I should say yes to, which you said.
I could do another 5 hour of calls.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, or meetings, or meet with people, but I think over the next 5 years, I would age 20 years, and it would compound negatively affect everyone around me versus help. And so I say no to a lot of people I just genuinely don't want to do things with, or like just whatever. And then I also say no to people I just genuinely don't have time for. Like I don't have time. You know, some people are, you know, asking, I'm in Sarasota right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have time. You know, I want to get back home.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to spend all weekend here. I'm, you know, I'm meeting with you. I met with Gracie. I, you know, do our thing and that's it. That's all the time I have.
I love that, bro. Right? Cause it's like you love yourself and your family and your future and the people around you so much that you're going to have some healthy boundaries.
Healthy boundaries.
Tell me about Running Man. Okay. First time for me to experience that, dude. I mean, that was a life-changing event for me, being around the like-minded people, the connections. Yep. And I do my own summits and these events, and we'll do a lot more in 2026 because yep. I know how powerful it is to surround yourself with the right people.
Yeah.
And those new connections are worth the price of admission, even if it's just one connection.
I know.
And some people are like, you know, whether it's $100, whatever the ticket is, like, is it worth it? I'm like, you tell me.
It's worth it.
Yeah. Right? Like a business venture, a new connection. So yeah, the question, I just want to thank you for putting that stuff on, creating what you love, you know, creating what you want to see in the world. I love that.
Yeah.
So how did Running Man start? How did this happen with Jesse?
Yeah. Jesse and I met maybe 6 years ago, and maybe a couple years in, we've done some adventures together and a bunch of sauna sessions, hundreds probably at that point. And I remember I was at his Connecticut house and he brought me in his office. And he's like, Deb, I got an idea. I want you to be a part of it. I want you to be, you know, co-founder with me, like really want to blow this thing up. And I'm like, what is it? He's like, we're going to create a brand called All Day Running. I'm like, cool. He's like, we're going to do these workouts every day and it's going to have a word of the day and it's going to each letter is going to correlate to a different exercise. And I'm like, sick idea. Let's do it. Hmm. He's like, we're going to do merch. We're going to, you know, I want to do events, you know, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, cool. I love all of it. I'm in. Let's rock. Hmm. The words didn't work out. The gear kind of worked out. It's working out.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
the gear works, bro. I wear those shorty shorts. I may do a little you know, hybrid one day where it's like not so big of a slit.
Yeah.
You know, to where I'm like, I'm not hanging out. But,
oh, it's hanging. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's all out there.
Yeah, there.
But the gear's working. Trust me.
The gear works. Yeah. And then I don't know. We just try shit out. Like we didn't waste any time.
Yeah.
Launched the brand. Got our first 1,000 customers, and we know, okay, what are they like? What are they not like? And then we adjust, pivot, and people love the in-person. And so I think it was the ride across America when we were riding our bikes. We might have been in New Mexico or Texas, and we were talking about doing this wellness retreat, Burning Man style, but more wellness. So we're like Running Man. And that was kind of first talks of it. With Jesse, we're both doers. You know, we're not really going to waste time if our head's on it. We're going to say, okay, this is what we have to do. Let's set up the team. Let's get the right people in place. Let's just try it. Let's see how it goes. Year one, we launched it. That was 3 years ago. And it was good. I think we had 500 people. We didn't make money on it. We, you know, reinvest everything back in. Year two happened, came closer, still lost money, but you know, it was a great vibe. It was an unbelievable vibe.
And you're like, lost money, worth it.
I'm like, we're doing it again.
Yeah.
So that was year three.
Wow.
And now we're getting closer and we just pour everything back into it. But
so what year is this?
This is, we're going on year four.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was I just a part of?
Three.
Year three.
Yeah.
See, I feel like from the outside looking in, you guys, I mean, like that's a success, even though maybe the year prior was not in the green, which is crazy.
I think, just there's always hiccups in
the
back end of every business. No, but from a community standpoint, from everyone coming, from, you know, people signing up for 5K and doing a full marathon, from, you know, the brands coming and getting exposure, from the keynote speakers getting to go on these big stages and talk to people, from a vibe, from an intention standpoint, full success.
Intention.
You know, I think from something that's going to last sustainably, you have to adjust the P&L, you have to see what's working, adjust ticket prices, accept more people in. Like that's the fun part. I find, I think him and I find that's the fun part about growing it. We have a call on Monday to go over kind of our next year plan.
Yeah.
But the idea of Running Man was there's no races or events around the world that we thought where you could run a full marathon and also do it at your leisure, you know, or an ultra or whatever you want to do. Everything is so, you, you train for 3, 4, 5 months, mm-hmm. you come in, you run, you have a beer, you leave.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to have an open format to where there's no time limit, there's no rules. You can just come in, you meet a ton of people, you see a great amount of brands, you have great conversations, good food, good energy, and you can run as much as you want or as little as you want. Mm-hmm. Some people run 3 laps around the 1 mile loop, yeah. or some people run 100 laps around yeah. the 1 mile loop. And it doesn't really matter because you could go run 3 laps, take a break, sauna cold, run another 3.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, and kind of keep doing that for 4 hours if you want. Mm-hmm. And so it's the open format is what we really wanted. And yeah, people love it. It's cool, man. It creates a different energy. It creates mm-hmm. less friction. It creates less stress, less anxiety, less pressure mm-hmm. to enter into the running space. And I don't know, that's kind of how Running Man evolved.
It's amazing. And yeah. I think that you just explained too, just again, what you started with, the intention and being less outcome focused. I mean,
yeah.
I did feel that energy of, I'm probably gonna be running more than I set out to run.
Right.
Because it's like, you are present, you are talking to people, you're maybe jumping in line and eating something, having conversations, and you just get away from the outcome needing to be a certain way, and you just kind of get into the experience.
Yeah.
And so many people were in that space, so you've done a heck of a job.
Thank you.
You and Jesse for creating.
Yeah, and the team, Bobby, Bianca, everyone. I mean, everyone is unbelievable. But yeah, you know, like anything, there's hiccups, there's growth, mm-hmm. there's everything. And so I think our intention has happened. We've, mm-hmm. you know, helped a lot of people.
So when it comes to like the business, who's your biggest mentor, you think?
I have a couple. I think throughout the years, my first mentor was my dad. Mm-hmm. He was an entrepreneur when I was young, and he taught me how to create an invoice and just, you know, write down my hours, write down what I did during those hours. It was construction at the time. And that helped me get into the right mindset of like business etiquette and whatnot. Early on, I guess when I was 20, I had this woman, Rebecca, who helped, you know, teach me emails and, you know, responding and how to set up events and how to, you know, fill a restaurant with, you know, a room full of people, how to, you know, do weddings, how to handle proposals, how to like literally handle hospitality. Mm-hmm. And that was a big stepping stone in my career because life is hospitality, you know, and business is hospitality. You have to have relationships if you want your business to scale, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was a big stepping stone. I then met this guy, Barry Sternlich, who started Starwood Capital, One Hotels, W Hotels. He opened my brain into kind of what was possible. I was helping him out with a couple of his hotels and building gyms and whatnot. And he gave me some insight on real estate and kind of how to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you know, my lawyer, who's now one of my best friends, Ryan Lewenden, taught me how to set up businesses, in the correct format to build them, to scale them, to bring investors or not bring investors, to find people that would acquire. And so I think he was a really good mentor. I met Jesse. Jesse has been a good, you know, mentor and soundboard off of things, you know, and, you know, the way that he sets his life up. But all those people, I'd say, have put health first, put their family first, you know, believe in community, believe in good relationships, believe in giving back, a ton, all philanthropists.
Mm.
And so I think throughout the last 15 years, I've just had good people that have helped kind of guide me and just have been good soundboards.
Yeah.
There's not one person.
Right. That's amazing.
You know, I'm 33. There's probably 10 that have really just opened my mind into a couple things.
I love you being able to recall these people, starting with your dad, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I know he's so proud of you, man. And just everyone from there, you know, and being able to recall what they did for you. That's amazing. And that's a gift because you were just, it's specific. And that's no doubt an accident. That's no doubt, I mean, obviously your family is one thing, but no doubt an accident that you've been surrounding yourself with the right people.
Yep.
You said hospitality. That's crazy, because you were in a different world, completely different. So how do you think back to those days? What do you think hospitality and living in that world of hospitality, how has that shaped you into who you are today, even though you're not technically in hospitality anymore?
When I was playing football and baseball in college, I needed to make money. And so I needed to, you know, pay my cell phone bill. And I remember I got a barback job. Mm-hmm. And I was always taught by my dad, like, keep your hands out of your pocket. There's always something to do. And I grew up doing like drywall, construction, carpentry, stuff like that. And that was tough. When I find myself behind a bar and I'm helping the bartender out clean glasses, I'm like, this is easy. This is easy compared to
you're conversating to.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah. I get to talk to people. Yeah. Like, I'm washing, you know, cups. Cool. You know, I'm filling, you know, the back shelf up. I'm helping him out or her out. I was excited because I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting tips. I'm getting hourly. Like, this is amazing. And so hospitality grew on me quick when I was 19. 20, I was bartending. 21, I was bartending. 22, I was managing. 20 to 24. I think it helped just shape the conversations between people and how to deal with different types of humans, whether it's the angry mom where her, you know, kid's chicken was undercooked, or it's the drunk, you know, jerk who, you know, is yelling at someone. Mm. You're handling so many different personalities. And I know in business, you're handling different personalities as well. And so that's helped me. You're also handling different personalities in relationships, whether it's your wife or girlfriend or whoever, like you're also, they have different, you know, mood swings and whatnot. And so I think dealing and understanding how to approach different types of people and different energies is all learned in hospitality. Mm. I think everyone should work in hospitality at some point for at least 24 to 36 months.
Yeah.
You know, and just be in it, you know, where you have to make compensation based on tips and how you treat people and how you have to approach them. Because if it's hourly and you're just on a salary, it doesn't fucking matter.
You're not even in it, really. You could be, but you couldn't be.
Yeah.
So what makes for big tips in your experience? So what were you doing? What are the things that you do to get big tips?
Knowing how to put out a fire, if there is a fire, keeping people excited, keeping people engaged, keeping people knowing there's something coming, there's something else on its way, giving them a good experience, getting a smile on their face, you know, not just telling them what they want to hear, but actually being present and, you know, remembering, you know, if, you know, your kid's name is Jojo at the end of the, you know, at the end of the dinner, okay, Jojo, have a good night, you know, like really listening and being in that moment versus just, you know, you see waiters or waitresses and I think, you know, some you can kind of see are faking it just to like put a smile on, and they put the smile on right when they give you the check and like, okay, like how was your night? No. The whole time you got to be like that. Yeah. Right. And it's not in a fake way. Either you have it or you don't.
Yeah.
But I think if you don't have it and you start to train yourself to meet people, everyone has a story. All you have to do is ask. Mm. I'm a big believer in that. And I find it fascinating to understand what other people's stories are and listen and see where they're coming from with different mindsets and situations and whatever. And so I think I've always been curious to ask questions and help out. And like, where are you guys coming from? Off work? Oh, what do you do for work? Cool. All right. Yeah. All right. Do you want a drink with that? Yeah. Okay. Cool. How about a beer? You want a beer? Cool. All right. Let's get him a beer. You know, like really, really adding hospitality into the conversation. And people are taking an hour, 2 hours out of their day to go sit down at your venue. Mm-hmm. And they chose you, especially if you're in a big city, out of thousands or hundreds of other options. That's an hour. They're never 2 hours. They're never, ever going to get back.
Sure.
Show them a good 2 hours, you know?
Love that.
And that's kind of what's, I don't know, tips for hospitality.
Spot on, man. Yeah. There's this shift, I think, that happens that you just described in so many words that, you know, it's like,
what up, baby?
Just checking on Josh. Yeah. Was he nodding off? He's like,
no,
oh,
Bryce. Good.
But this idea of just I feel like he's Jamie, by the way. I'm like, I want to get him more involved in the podcast. Where it's like, hey, pull that up. Oh, we don't have a screen? Just pull it up. Pull up. I say that because I do the same thing. Yeah, you actually are way more brief than me. I'm trying to, though, in my head, understand too, like what you said and internalize it. Because, you know, I think so much of what we say is less about us trying to say something, but about you needing to hear something. My words are only as good as how they land on you. Right? So it's like understanding that perspective. Like, what does this person need to hear? What's the main takeaway this person needs from me? Instead of like, here's what I need to say.
Yeah. What do I not need to say? You know, if someone's having a shitty day and someone just keeps pounding, like, that's not helping anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I know when I get hurt, you know, I remember I flipped over the handlebars in El Paso, Texas when we were riding across America.
And, we're about to get into your teeth story.
Yeah. And I remember Jesse, Kevin, and Tim were standing over me and they didn't say a word. They just looked. They didn't touch me. They just looked. And that's all I needed at that point. I didn't need them to like pick me up. I didn't need them to be like, Dev, you okay? You good? Yeah. I mean, they're all fathers as well, right? Like they knew what to do. And sometimes people don't need to hear anything. Sometimes it's just a listening or an energy transfer that they need.
So what was the feeling that you got from them in that moment?
From both, all three of them?
That you're screwed?
That I could calm. I could let my emotions do what they needed to do. I let the adrenaline calm down. And then we could kind of, you know, we assessed the situation.
How bad was it?
My whole back was scraped up. I didn't break anything. My helmet was cracked in half. So I had to get a new helmet. Handlebars were bent. Tire was bent, messed some things up. I didn't knock out any teeth on that
specific one. So how many times have you, because you mentioned that earlier when we were off podcast, how many times have you knocked a tooth out?
How many times have I knocked my teeth out? Probably falling off horses when I was young, football, you know, chipping them. Wakeboard accident that I had 3 years ago.
Hit on the board?
The board smacked, knocked three of them out.
That is.
That was like boxing. I was with my trainer in Mexico at the time. And he's like, we're just going to do a light spar. And I'm like, all right. He's like, I'm not going to punch you in the face. I'm like, I would hope not. And so we start, you know, going. And I dropped my hands and he cracked me.
Dang.
I chipped my tooth, the whole thing.
He swallowed it and it popped out.
Oh, you saw it.
Yeah.
I was missing a whole tooth. Mountain biking, hitting it on the handlebar. Snowboarding, hitting it on the rail.
Jeez.
That was bad.
The rail.
That was bad. When I was younger, and this was my fault, my mom will remember this. This was really bad. I didn't have my seatbelt on in the car and she was driving and someone cut in front of her and she had to slam on the brakes and I slammed forward and I hit my teeth on on the metal part of like the seat and my whole teeth, they were knocked out and then also
through
my gum. Yeah. Oof. So I've probably knocked my teeth out 8 times or so.
And at that point, you said, you know what? F it. I'm doing the veneers.
They were chipped. I grinded them. Yeah. It looked like a bunch of Band-Aids on it. Mm-hmm. The veneers are just easier.
Mm.
Yeah.
Before we get into a couple other things too, I wanted to press pause and say, is there anything that you want to talk about? I never really done this
Maybe
before.
Rhythm?
Yeah, please. So why did you start Rhythm or why are you a part of it? What do you see in Rhythm?
Yeah, we started Rhythm back in July. We could say May. Started in May. Rhythm is the world's easiest at-home blood test. I believe, and my partner Robbie believes, everyone should have access to the information that's running through their veins.
Yeah.
Right? As quickly as they want it and as precise and... and they should know what lab it's coming from. So we own a lab. We handle everything from A to Z. It takes 2 minutes. There's no needle. You can do it at home. And we send you a new monthly blood test, you know, every 30 days. And it tracks the main biomarkers that impact your health from a lifestyle perspective. You can adjust these biomarkers if you make lifestyle changes.
Yeah.
Testosterone, estrogen, B12, iron, D3, cholesterol, hormone management. And so it's amazing how many people just in the last 4 months we've helped. Tens of thousands of people are on our monthly blood test now, and it's insane what people are finding out about themselves.
Like what?
Whether it's low test and it's like, oh, that's why they've been depressed, or whether it's B12. A lot of people are deficient in B12, and so their energy's off. Cholesterol is a big one. There's cancer patients that are now getting access to monthly blood, which you know, helps them out, which I think is, I mean, you shouldn't have to go into the hospital just to get your blood drawn.
Sure. Especially today. I mean, we have convenient, we got Uber to the door.
Yeah. Uber will pick up your blood test for Rhythm. Yeah. We have that whole setup.
There you go.
And so we'll ship it out for you. But yeah, you know, we wanted to give people access. We don't sell you anything afterwards. Mm-hmm. There's too many of these blood test companies that are taking your blood and then saying, well, take this, or, you know, you have to buy this now, or throwing peptides in your face, yeah, or whatever it is. No, we just want to give you the information. We give you how to fix it from a lifestyle perspective. Yeah. If you need to take vitamins, then go take vitamins, but we're not pushing any to you. And I, you know, I own a supplement company. We're still not, do whatever you need to do. Most people are traveling, eating different things every month, seeing new people in new environments. And so your blood is naturally changing.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in an annual blood test. I think it's 2025, almost 2026.
Yeah.
You should know what's happening in your blood every month.
Facts.
You know, and you should be able to have the control of adjusting that month to month. And that's what Rhythm is. You know, it's the world's easiest blood test and lab that we can help people do that.
Amazing. Yeah. Controlled. It's trustworthy because of the lab. It's because you're in it too. It speaks a lot for me as well. And the ease, the convenience, the fact that you're not selling some type of treatment plan that's really robust and maybe not the right thing for everybody. Like, that's amazing. So what do you think is the big goal for Rhythm?
To make blood testing accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
You know, there's 450 million people in America. There's almost 8 billion people in the world. Majority of humans, I'd say nine, and this is me making this up. I'd say 90% of people don't know what's happening in their blood at all. You know, like at all. Maybe some do annually, but most people don't. If you're listening right now on the podcast, do you know what your levels are? Bet you I know the answer.
Yeah. 98% of people probably don't, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I would. Yeah, yeah, I would say no, because I didn't, and I'm super health oriented. Yeah. I haven't known what they are for the past 10 years until we launched this, and now I know every single month. So if I don't know, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna help you switch that up,
and
fix that, and prevent some diseases and health issues, and know how you can optimize your body in the best way, because it might be a simple fix.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whether it's energy or sex drive or acne or gut issues or you're not able to lose weight. Well, look at your levels first. Mm-hmm. And then that'll tell you what to do to switch those things up.
For sure. Awareness is such a major role in that. So becoming more aware of that. And it kind of gives you motivation when you feel like, okay, I can control these three things, or I'm going to do one or two things to focus on. We're going to be in a better place.
Confidence.
Yeah. Do you do anything differently based on the season of life, knowing more?
My cholesterol has been off. And so I'm staying away from the fried foods as much as I can, even though I live in Charleston and there's a lot of fried foods there.
Yeah.
testosterone was a little down, so I'm lifting more weights. I'm getting a little bit more sunshine in the morning. So the last couple months has been up and to the right, which is good. B12 was off, and so I started taking a ProMix B12 vitamin.
Love that.
And what else? What else? What else? Those were like the main things for me. Everything else was pretty optimal.
Okay, I would love to transition into this thing, and we can go back to anything you want to talk about. But the habits. So think about habits and actions you take that are high ROI actions. We've talked about a lot of them, right?
Okay.
But I want to hear some of those the highest return on investment actions or habits that you have, Devin, to get you in a place of high performance.
Yeah.
What are those?
Number one is a sauna cold plunge every day. Mm. If I can, I'm sweating every day. Thank you, my brother.
King. Thank you, legend. Appreciate you. Shout out to Ryan Tuttle. Let's go, baby.
Wow.
That's O&A. Shout out to O&A as well.
Oh, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
Sauna cold plunge is at my absolute top. It makes me feel good. It gives me energy. It lets my skin and the biggest organ on your body do what it needs to do and just like, let go.
Mm-hmm.
Cold plunging, I love just because it gives me that dopamine rush. And so I would say sauna cold's at the top.
Yeah.
I'd say another thing is being outside. I feel like God is just blessing you.
More aligned.
He's just kissing.
More connected.
Yeah, connected.
I saw a video with Josh Knows. This guy's talking about like thoughts that he thinks inside. He's like, I spend too much time inside. I have a thought. I don't trust it. I go take a walk.
Yeah.
I don't trust indoor thoughts, he said.
Ain't no way.
I love that, bro. That's so
true. We should be outside right
now. Go take a walk. We should be outside. You want to move the podcast?
We should. We should.
Just take the mic. Let's go.
Let's go. I would say my dad was a pro weightlifter and my mom was a pro arm wrestler.
I've seen pictures. That's right. You're bred for freaking.
I love. Yeah.
Performance.
Yeah, for sure. I have four sisters. They're all jacked too. I've been taking vitamins since I was a kid.
Mm.
Raw milk, fish oil, a pre and probiotic.
This stuff right here, dude. This stuff's life changing.
We created this.
D-Blow.
But I was taking another pre and probiotic before we created this unbelievable one.
Yeah.
I've been taking those my whole life, the fish oil, the pre and probiotic. Those are like big no matter what. So I've started taking creatine more, which I love.
Anything for sleep?
Sleep. Yeah, I mean, we have a relaxed product, which is great. Great magnesium and lemon balm. Lemon balm calms the nervous system, and so that's amazing.
Yeah.
So sauna, getting outside, taking my vitamins are really big hacks.
Yeah.
And just like, and it seems so simple, but are you doing it every day? I bet you you're not. I bet you if you do, you're going to feel a lot better. Find time. Just doing those three things, for me, amazing. Staying connected and making sure my family's good. My mom, my sister, not going months without talking to them. Not even really going weeks. Shooting them a message, shooting them a call. That's a big one.
Do you make time for that? Do you plan those moments or do you just kind of spontaneous?
My four sisters and my mom are in a group chat. And so we chat every day in it. Everyone's always sending messages and memes and just funny stuff. It's great.
It's good.
So that keeps me grounded. I would say I'm doing on-site next week, which is, it's kind of like the Hoffman process, but it's a 7-day full reset, body, mind, no phone, no one knows your name. It's intense therapy. And it just breaks down your patterns and tries to get rid of the BS. And so doing, you know, one of those resets a year. And then I do therapy calls once or twice a week. Call my therapist, tell her just a soundboard.
Yeah.
You know, she helps break down my brain and kind of where I'm going with stuff and how to approach it. So having a soundboard is really important.
Amazing.
And then having something, I say this is a really important one, having something to look forward to. I'm really looking forward to Africa, where I'm building a hospital for a village there. And so I'm excited to go there. And, you know, that gives me purpose because we're helping 15,000 people, you know, that need a hospital. And then I'm climbing Denali next June. And so those are, you know, things I get to look forward to.
Yeah, and you're preparing for it. You're looking forward to it, yeah.
Yeah. those are, yeah, you know, not to get too, but like, make sure your sexual life is good. I think that's a big one for people, right? Mm-hmm. Like your relationship life, that's got to be kind of on point, or I don't know, the human body's, you know, not probably doing what it needs to. Taking my shoes off, take it off a lot. I rarely wear shoes at home.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, now that's a thing. I don't know, I could keep going.
This is great. I mean, do you want to keep going? Yeah. The connection, if you have any more that come to mind, please.
Ocean, yeah. Getting in water. I love getting in water. Yeah. Our body's made majority of water. Get in water. Yes. Let it soak you for
that's
a second.
The movement too. It's like, I think about that all the time.
Yeah.
I'm saying the body's 77% water. When we sit around and we're stagnant and we're sedentary, it's like, yeah, I mean, that breeds bacteria. It breeds disease, dis-ease. Like, so movement is medicine. That's movement, cliche, but dude, even if you're bouncing around, jump rope, walk.
I probably should have said movement at the beginning, but I think it comes so second nature. I guess sonic hold promotes the contrast and movement within your body.
I don't think you have a problem with being too sedentary. I don't think you're just like, go. Yeah, what's next? What's
weights? Here? I do think everyone should lift weights at least once a week. Yeah. I love lifting weights. And not a lot. I'm not like a bodybuilder, but I love just lifting some stuff. Building muscle density versus big muscles is kind of what I'm about. That keeps the test up, so that's always good.
Big time.
My blood, knowing what's in my blood now, that's for sure a big one. Traveling, new conversations, meet new people. You know, it's why we moved to Charleston. You know, I've been in New York for 12 or 13 years.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a big move.
Going to a new city, meeting new people, new conversations, you know, not knowing who you are, what you do, just good conversations.
Yeah.
And so I think meeting new people is it opens your brain. That's why I like going to these mountains. And the conversations I had in Antarctica at 12,000 feet with the SEAL teams, those were crazy. Some of these guys took down Osama bin Laden. Like those guys, guys that are treating cancer in India, you know, guys that own, you know, a massive hedge fund, this woman who's like the first woman to summit, you know, whatever, like insane conversations.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hack in life. You know, it opens your brain. It gives you ideas. You know, it's why people listen to podcasts, right? To get ideas, to try new things out. Now go and do it, you know? Don't be a witness, be a player, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because I find myself like that too. If I'm always just consuming and not being a player, not putting it to use, not putting it to action. Yeah.
Jump in the game.
Yeah.
Put me in, coach.
Yeah, dude.
Go try it out. Mm. See how you feel.
Okay, so what about these actions or habits when it comes to connection and groundedness and maybe spirituality? Like, what does that look like for you in terms of slowing things down? I don't think you have a problem with needing motivation or, you know, I gotta move today. Like, you're more like, okay, what does it look like to turn that off and get some sleep? What does it look like to live connected to, you know, something like that gives you that like life, that spirit life?
I talk to God a lot. I mean, just throughout the day, I pray, I ask questions, I try to trust that if something's going not how I want, that it's supposed to be going like that. And so just having a hierarchy that you can talk to has helped me a lot. I try to meditate, and I have my own ways of meditating. Excuse me, where I listen to a meditation. That doesn't happen all the time. And then I was telling Clay this actually. This freaking, I do this voice note journal.
Yeah.
I don't write, my hand cramps up. And so I like to just go on I have a notes tab, and it's just my journal. And it's voice to text.
Voice to text.
And it just writes it all out. And that's good for me to just know kind of what's going on, and I can look back on it. When we were riding our bikes across America, Jesse said, we were sitting down one day, and he said his biggest regret is that he never journaled. And I always think about that.
Wow.
He's like, I don't remember some of the things I've done or people I've met or, you know, things I've learned necessarily. And so he recommended, he's like, Deb, start journaling. Mm. And so I started journaling on that trip, and that was 3 years ago. And yeah, 3 years ago.
Wow. And so you have a folder in your notes, and you kind of just, here's the day, here's the subject, here's the, you know.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, I mean, if you're anything like me, it's like, you need to have that, that reflection time.
I mean, it's just goes. Sometimes there's photos.
Incredible.
Yeah. It just goes. But this is actually this is the,
oh
yeah,
that's you.
Yeah. This is when I crashed.
Wow. Dang. But, yeah. Ripped you up, dude.
But like, yeah, I had some photos in. I just talk about kind of what was going on.
Yeah.
In that day. Sometimes I don't do it every day. Sometimes it's a 2 week period. And I'm just like, all right, the last 2 weeks, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, but that just helps me keep my life and brain and what I've done somewhat organized.
That's good. What's bringing you most joy right now in life?
What?
What's bringing you the most joy and happiness right now in this season?
Really good question. What's bringing me the most joy in life? I think grasping control of my schedule and my time to people, and you know, moving to Charleston has given me I'm able to develop a little bit of a routine. And so I think just really, not that I didn't own my time for the last 5 years, but it definitely got a little out of control. And so I feel like I'm getting 1-2% better right now with that. And that feels like a massive change because it was already really amazing from what I created. And now it's like perfected even more, even more, even more. Get closer to just waking up content, not ecstatic, but waking up, okay, I'm good. You know, like life's okay. Like not worrying about the outcome, just worrying about the now. And that's bringing me joy. Also not, I was in this mode where I would have a marathon every other month. I, you know, training for Everest, training for the bear crawl, training for something. It's a lot. It's a lot. It starts to take over your life a little bit, and your personal and your relationships and my friends and my mom and my sisters. And I think I've gained that back, you know, where I've spread out the mountains, I've spread out the marathons, I've spread out the hard shit that I do to where it's not so back to back to back to back to back. And so I think that's bringing me a lot of happiness that I can spend more time with my family and friends and me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really get a lot of me time. I think getting me time lately is giving me a lot of happiness.
Is me time important to you?
So important. I'm definitely an extrovert. But I'm also definitely an introvert.
Yeah.
And I love my alone time.
Yeah. You're everything.
Huh?
You're everything with, like, you know, in terms of extrovert and introvert. Like, I know that may sound silly to someone listening, but it's like, I feel that because when I'm with people, I get energy. Like, I love being around people. But yeah, if you don't have the me time, if you don't have time to just like, hey, well, let me just breathe, decompress. Yeah. Let me think about what happened today. Let me just actually be in silence. Like if I were to think back Brian at 21 years old, who was cranking music up every time or, you know, in the car, if you were to tell me at 32 that like some of my favorite moments in the day are just like when I'm in the truck and sometimes I just don't know music, no noise. I'm just with myself and with my thoughts, talking to God or just being, not even thinking about stuff, but just silence. And that's really important for me as an extrovert. Which that's why I know what you mean.
I love listening to prayers lately.
Yeah?
Like I pray, but I've felt like, you know, I know I called you the other day. I have a couple apps I try to listen to, and that gives me a lot of joy too. I feel like it just grounds me.
Yeah.
And so
like the Bible app or some other meditation.
Bible or just a meditation or like a feel good.
I got one for you.
Yeah.
I'll share this with you. Please. Lectio 365.
Okay.
I love it because it always like is a sliver of scriptures, like the Psalm or something in the Old Testament, let's say, right? But then it's a lot of just inspirational messaging as well. And they create space on the app for like stillness and for you to just meditate and pray.
Oh, cool.
And then they'll speak into that. And it's very contemplative. It's very spiritual. It's almost like, yeah, a lot of Eastern mysticism meets like Christianity.
Yeah.
And it's very cool because that's where Christianity started, was East in the East, you know?
I'm with that, man.
Yeah.
I would love to.
I'm going to send it to you right now.
I love listening to and like understanding other religions too.
Same. I've never been more curious about stuff in general than like this season of life.
Yeah. Buddhism and Judaism and Muslim and like all the, I'm so fascinated with religions and how they actually overlap way more than we think.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we do think that, but, everyone's brought up different. Everyone has different families and is in different cultures, and that's something to respect.
Mm-hmm.
I respect all religions.
Yeah.
Unless you're hurting other people.
Well, if you're abusing or weaponizing any set of belief is not good.
Yeah, but like, but overall,
yeah,
everyone has their place, and every religion has their place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, okay. I mean,
that's just a thought.
Well, I started questioning things more, and I had this thought where it was essentially, because I was raised Christian and then just kind of like left and, you know, just was more, I guess, more or less wanting to step away from that because it was just who I should be or what I should believe. But I always thought too, from this point on, this, you know, 2022-ish time frame, if what I believe about God or about people is not making me more loving, I should probably check that belief.
Yeah.
Like, because I think the foundation of all these religions and certainly what Christ talked about and exemplified and is love. Love for God, love for people.
Just love for people, man.
Yeah. Like that's the
Marley.
Yeah.
Marley, man, that guy's like a saint.
Like, yeah.
Just the love he put out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think love cures it all.
Mm-hmm.
Love, like if you just love when you're mad, if you love when you're happy, if you love when you're uncertain, if you love just in general, that word, that feeling, it fixes everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And the motivation, I talk about that a lot. I think about that a lot. Love for myself, my girls, my wife, my fam, my future. Like if I'm like, I've said it before too, but it's like competition. Like you're not competition.
No.
He's not competition. You're not. It's like, no, there's no competition. It's you and who you were and leveling up and growing from there.
Yeah.
And sometimes that looks like letting go of who you thought you were or shedding these, you know, these things. Not all about just adding to yourself. But that's the most pure, long-lasting, sustainable motivation is love, right?
I agree. I think with competition, it's not this or that. It's this and that.
Mm.
Like how can you collaborate? How can you help others? How can you do it together?
Yeah.
We're all one world.
Yep.
One human race.
Mm-hmm.
One planet. One. We're one.
One love.
We really are one.
Yeah.
Love. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think we have to, the world needs to work a little bit more together. I think it's getting there, actually.
Yeah,
I do. I'm pretty optimistic. If you don't watch the news, I don't know.
I was literally gonna say, bro.
By the way, from places I've gone, not watching news, like physically being a player in the game of Earth,
of life,
and of life, and going to the depths of Antarctica multiple times, to going to the highest point in the world and being saturated in, you know, in these cultures, to, you know, going to third world countries, building a village in and a hospital in Africa, like being in depth with these people, seeing these charities, seeing the philanthropy efforts by my billionaire friends to my friends that are just starting off.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm biased because of the people around me, but I'm pretty optimistic that the world is somewhat going in the right direction of people are aware.
Yeah.
And it's because of this thing. It wasn't like this. If go put yourself in the shoes of Marcus Aurelius, go put your shoes in Alex the Great, go put your shoes in, a civilization 2,000 years ago.
Right.
That they're killing people. They're taking people's heads off. That is a full massacre happening. You know, right now, the truth is here. Like, people are seeing what's happening in the world and being able to be a human and saying, that's not right.
Yeah.
That's wrong. Mm-hmm. Whatever. And I think that awareness, I think, is positive because people are seeing, wow, like, guys, we're all just human. Like,
yeah.
I see comments on like videos where someone's getting bullied. People don't stand for that shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You see the comments on, kids that, are going to sleep hungry, and people are doing stuff about that. Like, yeah. It's not like people aren't trying. We could always try more, but I don't know. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but I do think that the world can get better and is getting better as a whole.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know,
I'm with you. I'm an eternal optimist. I think we both are. Yeah. Forever looking for the bright side. At least that hope.
Yeah.
And you said something the other day where it said
eternal optimist.
Yeah. Never heard that. I'll put that on a shirt, but you're like, hey, if you want to be cynical about the world or the United States, watch the news.
Yeah.
If you want to feel excited and hopeful about humanity or the U.S., drive across it.
Right.
Go meet the people. Go right. Be in the real world.
Right.
Because this right here is not the real world.
Yeah.
Like, we see the worst and the best.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the worst.
Yeah.
That's what captures human attention is worst case scenario, but worst example of humans,
Yeah. And I think that, but this brings awareness to it.
Sure.
Right. That, and I think I'm also comparing against, 10,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago, World War II, World War, I don't know. This is going to be a crazy statement. World War II would not have happened if social media and this phone was around. It would have stopped immediately, I think. I would hope, I just think that this actually brings a lot of awareness to things.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I do think humans will make the right decisions.
Yeah.
I'm pretty optimistic.
There's hope. Agreed.
Yeah.
I want to finish. As we kind of finish, I do want to make sure I ask two more questions.
Yeah, go.
Is there anything you want to talk about that we haven't already?
No, I'm good.
Just making sure.
Yeah, all right, cool.
Good. Yeah. Good. No. I've loved every single minute of this conversation.
Cool. Yeah, cool.
And I think as we wrap up, perspective, maybe a little bit future focused, but some of these questions came to mind for me. I'm gonna skip that one. We talked about that already. Well, let me ask this. More focused on purpose, your purpose, like what you feel like that is on this earth, this life. But what kind of advice would you give your 25-year-old self?
Yeah.
What's the best advice you give your 25-year-old self? In less than 2 minutes, what does he need to hear?
Yeah, don't try to figure it all out right now. Let it unfold how it's going to unfold, and it's going to work out. Promise it does, because I'm 33 and he was 25.
Yeah,
and it worked.
I'm here.
I'm here. So it's definitely going to work out. And be honest, work hard, and go to sleep every night knowing that you gave it 100%, and that's it. And just trust.
Fire.
Yeah.
What about your 80-year-old self? What advice would you give Devin at 80?
Yeah.
Besides, hey, I didn't think we'd make it here, buddy.
Yeah. Holy shit, we're here. I think about my 80-year-old self a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's regret. I don't want to ever feel regret in anything. And so I'm very... very, I have a lot of intent on that. Like, I have a lot of focus on not regretting things. I never want to feel regret.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to, hopefully have helped people out and help people wake up happier and healthier and, been a great husband, a great son, a great brother, a great friend to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I'm those, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah.
You know?
Kids one day or no? You think?
I can't wait to have kids.
Yeah. You'd be a great dad.
I would have kids yesterday.
Yeah.
If the timing was right. Mm-hmm. But
it's always divine timing.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see.
You're never too late. You're never too early.
I'm not engaged yet. And so we'll see.
Yeah. That's good. You're going to be a great dad when that season comes, if it comes, whatever it is. But like to your point, not rushing into it, not making the outcome be a certain way, just controlling what you can control, focusing on the now. How can I show up in the best way? How can I be the man that my future needs? These kind of themes I think we both spend a lot of time on in a day-to-day life.
Well, check this out. I was saying this yesterday, actually. How old were your parents when they had you?
Late 20s and 32.
So say 32.
Yeah.
I'm 33.
Mm-hmm.
How old are you?
32.
Yeah, so you're 32. If you had a son or daughter right now, you would be giving them all the information that you've learned up until this point. Mm-hmm. So 32 years of maybe trauma, maybe good, bad learnings, education, schooling, whatever it is, relationship with God.
Yep.
Now, if you had a kid at 25, you'd be giving him or her 25 years of whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you give them right now is who they're going to be. I'm a big believer in that.
Hmm.
Nature versus nurture. Yeah. I'm a big believer in that. And so don't sell your kid short. Be the best person be the best person you can before you have the kids and learn as much as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So you can give them the best odds to having a great life and making the right decisions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times that's not the case. And those generational patterns from your parents and their grandparents are passed down.
Yeah.
And they never stop because no one ever catches up and says, stop, let me figure this out. Let me stop these negative patterns. Let me find purpose. Let me go about life the correct way. They just have a kid and they're like, well, guess what? You got great, great, great grandpa's trauma coming on you, baby.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's normally how it happens. So the generational patterns, the negative ones, they have to stop. And anyone listening has control of stopping those patterns before their kid and their future generations come, but you have to stop them and you have to realize them. The Hoffman Institute has helped me with that. I'm going to on-site next week, which
I didn't even tap into that question. I have questions you should ask on camera.
You would love it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And it helps you break down the patterns, patterns might be being right all the time, overworking to please others, not respecting yourself, whatever it is, right? Negative patterns that your parents, their grandparents might have passed down. You got to break those patterns so you can break the generational pattern trait. Big believer in that.
So just real quick, I mean, I think about the person who's already a dad or already a mother, already a parent, and they feel like they've already blown it.
They haven't blown it.
What do you tell them?
Because it's an ongoing. You're not going to work out for 7 days and be in shape for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You're not going to do therapy for 7 days and be good for the rest of your life. It is ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to work out to stay in shape.
Yep.
You have to go to therapy. You have to work on the mind. You have to read the books. You have to be around the right people. You have to expand your brain. You have to learn. And that compounding will help you change or become better.
Yeah.
But it's not just going to happen with, that one book or that one podcast or I heard that one time. It might be a quick aha moment, but you need thousands of aha moments to constantly just ingrain into your brain what the right thing to do and what you believe in and what the best path forward is.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's ongoing. Like when I become a dad, I'm not going to stop going to therapy. I'm not going to stop going to on-site every year. I'm not going to stop working out. I'm probably going to go more, right? I'm going to really, really show, the man I am, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it's constant. And also, that's the beauty of life. That's why some of these older men that I look up to, they're so fucking wise because they never stopped for 50 years. 50 years. it's almost double our age. Mm. You know what I mean? Have just been doing this nonstop. They've just been learning and bettering themselves and reading the books and listening to the people and traveling. They're filled with knowledge.
Staying curious.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And they're passing down that information. So I think it's an ongoing, fun little game.
Yeah. Final idea. Who do you want to be remembered as? Who do you want to be remembered as by people around you after we're dead and gone?
Yeah. I want to be known as the guy that helped others, just very simple. He was just that problem solver. He helped, he helped others. That's it.
Mm.
I think if I was to, that's it.
That's good.
Pretty simple.
I love that, bro. You have no idea the impact that you have on people. I'm a firm believer in that. We have a fraction, because people will tell us what we do and how this affected us, but I know who you are. I know what you put out in the world. I know your heart. And I'm telling you, bro, you have no idea the impact and the waves. That's probably God. He's trying to remind you too. The positive impact you've had in the world. It's insane. Thank and you're going to realize it one day, probably when you get that like total one consciousness about how you live. It's really powerful, man.
I really appreciate that, man. I appreciate you having me on.
And yeah.
That was really kind to say that, because I probably get, I question myself sometimes, and not for others, just like, I don't know, I just am, I don't know everything. I'm trying to figure it out every day, I question like, shit, am I doing the right thing? Am I going about this correctly? And that helps get through.
We talked about this yesterday where a good leader is kind of questioning himself. Like, he falls into the imposter syndrome at times because he's like, am I doing everything? If you don't ever have that, like humility or kind of second guessing, like, then maybe you're not a good leader.
Yeah.
Maybe if you already have it all together and you don't need to work on anything else, I feel like that's not a trait in a leader that I would admire. I look at the people who, like yourself, you've done all the stuff, you've accomplished all these things, you've achieved at the highest level, and you're doing what you say you'll do, all the stuff that we admire about people. And yet you're like, I don't have it all figured out. And matter of fact, that's for me. It might not work for you. It might not be the same for you. Right. It might not be your truth.
Yep.
So I agree. I promise, last thing, one truth. So last thing, because I didn't get to that question. One truth or guiding principle that you would, leave with someone listening to this that would change their life and make it a positive one.
Put your health at the absolute top priority in your life, no matter what, over your family, over your business, over decision making. Make sure that your health is at the best it can possibly be on that day, whether that's sleep, whether it's taking your vitamins, whether it's going for the run. I'll leave it at that. Make sure your health is at the absolute top priority in your brain.
Love it. Why?
If you're not good, you can't help anyone else. You're that's not it. Showing up 100%. It's if you have a tweaked back and you're not walking, or you're feeling a little, under the weather, you're not helping your fam.
That's it. Not at your best.
You're done, I think the health is, health, no matter what.
Yeah. Top. And to your point, it's physical, mental, everything. Spiritual.
Oh, yeah. Health isn't health. Just how, how jacked you are. I'm talking your mental health, your physical, your spiritual. Yeah. Make sure that is the absolute top priority in your life. No one else is you. Everyone else has their own body to figure out. And that goes for your wife, your kids. Like, you need to be good.
Mm.
You need to be good. Or are you really doing them justice,
Take care of yourself so you can take care of others and help others.
Yeah.
And make the world a better place.
Let's go.
You're doing it, bro.
Appreciate you, man.
Devin LeVake, love you, dude. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for jumping on, bro.
Appreciate you.
That was incredible.
Thanks for having us.
I got 1,000 more questions.
I got to pee. Good.